Welcome to the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com, your daily morning podcast, updating you on everything you need to know to win your fantasy baseball league. Here's your host, Jake Crumpler.
What's up, fantasy managers? Welcome back to another episode of the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and I'll be your host for this edition of the pod. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler and can find all of my work at CrumplerBaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball related from Sunday, June 28th. We'll start it off, as always, with the transactions, injuries, news, and notes from around the league, kicking things off with the bad news as outfielder Wyatt Langford was placed on the 10-day IL with a hamstring strain. Langford spent about 6 weeks on the IL with a forearm strain earlier this year, and he raked for 3 weeks before getting injured. Once again, the club announced that the injury-prone outfielder will remain on the IL through the All-Star break. So Wyatt Langford out with a hamstring strain, out through the All-Star break. Hopefully he returns in full health afterwards and can stay healthy through the rest of the year, though that's not something that the outfielder can guarantee at this point in his career. Outfielder Evan Carter was activated from the 10-day IL in a corresponding move after missing 2 weeks with an oblique strain. Carter will take over for Langford as the Rangers' everyday center fielder. And our other IL placement involves outfielder Blake Dunn, who hit the 10-day IL with an elbow sprain. I wouldn't be surprised if Dunn is out through the All-Star break as well, but nothing's confirmed as yet. Nothing's concrete. So Dunn, at least out the next 10 days. Outfielder TJ Friedl was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. He recovered his form at AAA after being demoted at the start of June, and he'll be on the strong side of a center field platoon with Dane Myers. It's TJ Friedl. I think he should be much better moving forward. In terms of transactions, outfielder Elliot Ramos was activated from the 10-day IL after missing a month and a half with a quad strain. Ramos will take over as the Giants' everyday left fielder, which will take away playing time from Drew Gilbert and Jonah Cox, who were platooning in center field, as that means Jung-Hoo Lee will move from right field to center field, and likely Casey Schmidt goes from left field to right field instead of Elliot Ramos moving because he's not the best fielder. But that does mean with Ramos returning that we'll see some limited playing time for Jung-Hoo Lee and Bryce Eldridge because they're likely to see fewer at-bats against left-handed pitchers as they're both southpaws that struggle against southpaws. Third baseman Buddy Kennedy was designated for assignment in a corresponding move and was subsequently traded to the Mariners. Next, starting pitcher Kaiwei Tang was optioned to the minors by the Astros after allowing five or more runs in four of his last five starts. So Tang has started to regress, looking more like the starter we expected to, as he's really just a one-pitch guy. The move does make room for Christian Javier, who's nearing a return from the IL, and the club already has a five-man rotation following the return of Hunter Brown. So the rotation will not be hurting in Houston with Tang in the minors. Starting pitcher Miguel Ulloa was recalled for the minors in a corresponding move. He's the Astros' number 11 prospect. Got a lot of strikeouts, a lot of walks, and high ERA and WHIP marks at AAA. So Ulloa is not a top prospect that you need to go running to the wire for. He's likely to provide length out of the Astros' bullpen. Next, we have starting pitcher Jack Flaherty, who was activated from the 15-day IL after missing 2 weeks with a peroneal strain in his ankle. He started versus the Astros, tossing five shutout innings, allowing two hits and three walks while fanning nine. He induced 16 whiffs with 26% CSW across 24 pitches. Flaherty looked very strong in this one, returning from the IL and throwing a tick harder on both his fastball and slider. He did a decent job of going BSB with four seamers up and breakers low, as each one of his trio of offerings induced at least five whiffs. But I think he was lucky to get away with 15 foul balls on four seamers that would have otherwise likely resulted in balls in play. But maybe there's something to the extra velocity from Flaherty as well as the improved command, and we'll keep an eye on him in Texas up next. Reliever Emmanuel DeJesus was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. Next, outfielder Chase DeLauder was activated from the 10-day IL after missing a couple weeks with a rib cage fracture. DeLauder will return to being the Guardians' everyday right fielder with some extra time at DH to keep the oft-injured outfielder healthy. Outfielder Petey Halpin was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. Next, designated hitter Romy Gonzalez was activated from the 60-day IL after missing all season following off-season shoulder surgery Gonzalez, the lefty killer, will be on the short side of a DH platoon for the Red Sox. Catcher Mickey Gasper was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. Next outfielder Dylan Beavers was activated from the 10-day IL after missing a month and a half, about, with an oblique strain. Beavers will return to the strong side of a right field platoon with Tyler O'Neill for the Orioles. Second baseman Jeremiah Jackson was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move, which should give Jackson Holliday more free run at second base while also allowing Blaze Alexander to shift to the keystone position to open up the hot corner for Kobe Mayo versus left-handed pitchers. And lastly, another Orioles move. Catcher Adley Rutschman was activated from the 7-day IL after missing the minimum time with a concussion. He will return to being the Orioles' everyday catcher, which will shift Samuel Basayo back to a DH role. Catcher Sam Huff was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. And in terms of news, outfielder Teoscar Hernandez is expected to be activated from the 10-day IL today after missing the past month with a hamstring strain. Hernandez will return to being the Dodgers' everyday left fielder, forcing Tommy Edman to second base and Alex Freeland to the bench. Now we can take a look at our notable performances from Sunday, a day in which we had a full slate of 15 games. We'll start it off with our hitters, leading off with designated hitter Kyle Schwarber, who helped the Phillies to win in Queens, going 2-for-5 with 2 runs, a home run, 2 runs batted in, and a steal to complete the combo meal. That's 30 homers for Kyle Schwarber to go with 2 steals. This homer went 408 feet at 108 miles per hour, and it extended his major league lead in the home run category. 30 homers for Kyle Schwarber. He's also the National League leader in slugging percentage at .591. And honestly, 60 homers isn't out of the question. He'd really have to continue to keep hitting bombs at a crazy pace. But even if Schwarber settles for 50 home runs, only 7 players have ever had back-to-back 50 homer seasons. Remember that Schwarber hit 56 last year. The other 7 players to have back-to-back 50 homer seasons: Babe Ruth, Mark McGwire, Ken Griffey Jr., Sammy Sosa, Alex Rodriguez, Aaron Judge, and Shohei Ohtani. That's an elite list. So if Schwarber can complete that tall task, he will be on the short list of some of the best power hitters of all time. Speaking of great power hitters, third baseman Junior Caminero helped the Rays to win against the Diamondbacks, going 3-for-3 with a run, a home run, 2 runs batted in, and a walk for good measure. It was his 22nd homer of the year, and it traveled 463 feet at 114 miles per hour, making it the furthest and hardest hit ball of the day. Caminero has been on fire recently with 7 homers in his last 6 games, and he's improved so much as a hitter overall by more than doubling his walk rate and batting nearly 30 points higher at .292. That he's more than backed up last year's breakout, and Caminero looks like one of the best hitters in all of baseball. Another guy who's been on fire recently, first baseman Luis Garcia Jr. helped the Nationals to win in Baltimore, going 3-for-5 with 3 runs, a double, 2 home runs, and 5 runs batted in. He's up to 16 homers on the year now. First one went 401 feet at 105 miles per hour. Second one went 377 feet at 110 miles per hour. Garcia Jr. has 6 home runs in his last 6 games and 11th in the month of June alone, putting him 2nd in the majors this month behind only Hunter Goodman at 12. Garcia's hot streak goes back even further than the month of June, though. Through his first 34 games, he batted just .231 with 1 homer and a 60 WRC plus. But in 44 games since then, Garcia's batted .313 with 15 homers and a WRC plus north of 170, making him a top 10 qualified hitter during that time. And it's completely supported by underlying metrics. His plate discipline metrics have improved only slightly, but his batted ball metrics are off the charts. He set a new max exit velocity at 114 miles per hour. He's improved his barrel rate by 7% to 12%, and he's pulling the ball more than ever, allowing him to maximize his power. I don't think Garcia's a 30-homer hitter that's going to bat over .300 the rest of the season, but he's so much better than he's ever been. And if he could only recover the speed that allowed him to steal 22 bases 2 years ago, or even the 14 from last year — he's at 2 this year — he'd be a 5-category fantasy contributor. Regardless, Garcia Jr. needs to be rostered everywhere. And lastly, first baseman Ryan O'Hearn helped the Pirates to win against the Reds, going 3-for-5 with 3 runs, 2 home runs, and 4 runs batted in. He's up to 13 homers on the year. First one went 421 feet at 106 miles per hour, and the second one 384 feet at 99 miles per hour. O'Hearn was continuing his steady yet underrated production before an injury kept him out for 2 weeks. He's been a bit underwhelming since then, but his power is still intact. He's hit 6 homers in 4 weeks since returning from the IL, accounting for nearly half of his homers on the season. But he seems to be overly aggressive at the plate. He's walking just 2% of the time while striking out nearly 30% of the time. That's just in this 4-week span, not in the whole season. I don't really know if O'Hearn's selling out for power or what. That would seem to be the case based on the power production as well as the amount of strikeouts. But O'Hearn's at his best when he's patient and walking at a double-digit rate. And overall, O'Hearn doesn't look as great this year as he did the last 3. His bat speed continues to drop, and so does his hard hit metrics. Ultimately, I think O'Hearn will continue to be slightly above average, which makes him more of a deep league 5 outfielder play than a must roster in standard Yahoo leagues with 3 outfielders. But if you'd like a breakdown of other notable hitting performances from Sunday, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the mound and check out some notable starting pitching performances, opening with Chris Sale, who did all he could, but the Braves lost in San Francisco. He went 6 innings, allowing 8 hits and 2 runs, walking 1 while fanning 10. He induced 18 whiffs with 31% CSW across 94 pitches. Sale has been great this year. He's 3rd in baseball with a 2.10 ERA. He's got the 10th most strikeouts in baseball as well with 109. And in this one, Sale had great pitch separation as always with a triforce of 4-seamers, sliders, and changeups to right-handed batters, and a similar triforce with sinkers replacing changeups versus left-handed batters. Sale's 4-seamer overwhelmed in this one with 13 whiffs and 38% CSW, but he was unlucky to return a .538 BABIP leading to the 8 hits in this one. Sale dominated regardless, but he was outdueled by Robbie Ray, who helped the Giants to win against the Braves, tossing 8 shutout innings, allowing 4 hits and 1 walk while fanning just 2. He induced 8 whiffs with 22% CSW across 95 pitches. And Robbie Ray continues a surprising scoreless streak that feels very precarious. He has no earned runs in 4 of his last 5 starts, but he's still unable to command his slider, returning just 36% strikes here, and he's gone away from his 4-seamer, becoming a sinker changeup arm. This was a start of those 2 pitches churning quick outs in the field. Overall, Ray went 23 for 27 on outs on balls in play, which is a 148 BABIP. This approach isn't sustainable. He really needs to lock in his slider for us to believe in him, and he won't keep up this scoreless streak if he doesn't lock in that slider. Coors up next should present a problem for Robbie Ray. I think we still start him there considering how well he's been doing recently and the fact that that slider could lock in at any moment, but definitely be a little bit wary. I'll probably have him in the questionable start tier for that one. Next, from Robbie Ray to Sonny Gray. Sonny Gray helped the Red Sox to win against the Yankees, tossing 7 1/3 scoreless innings, allowing just 1 hit and 1 walk while striking out 9. He induced 14 whiffs with 33% CSW across 97 pitches. And Gray is tied for first in the American League with 9 wins this year. And he had everything working on Sunday as all 6 of his pitches induced at least 1 whiff. But he wasn't very pristine. 42% strikes on sweepers as his primary offering, as he bounced way too many of them. He was lucky to rack up 9 strikeouts thanks to a 60% put away rate, and even luckier to go 13 for 14 on outs on balls in play. I think Gray is someone we will start this year. The wins are great, decent amount of strikeouts with pretty solid ratios, but I don't think we're going to see a 2.69 the rest of the year. It feels a bit fluky. He's a guy who I see more so as a 3.5 ERA type guy. Next, we have Connor Prelip, who helped the Twins to win against the Rockies, tossing 6 innings, allowing 6 hits and 2 earned runs, walking nobody while striking out 10. He induced 20 whiffs with 32% CSW across 93 pitches, and Prelip earned the gallows pole by leading baseball with those 20 whiffs. And based on the results, we can say Prelip is back. He took advantage of the Rockies with a career-high 10 strikeouts and a gallows pole. Half of the strikeouts came on his curveball, a pitch that he's thrown just 17% of the time this year. He's been a 4-seamer slider guy all year, but he lost the command of the slider and didn't have the necessary support offerings to allow him to survive without it. His changeup has not been the answer, but the curve might be. He threw the hook for 70% strikes with 7 whiffs and 48% CSW here, while his slider excelled in the zone, suggesting that the command is back with 7 whiffs and 88% strikes. But it's hard for me to be convinced when I look at the strike zone plot from Prelip and see his breakers all over the place. We got a lot of high sliders, a lot of high curveballs. There's no real intention. There doesn't seem to be command that he can put those pitches where he wants to. And he also didn't have 60% strikes on his fastball either. So it seemed a little bit precarious overall. And this has Blame It on the Rockies written all over it. The Yankees up next for Prelip pose a significant challenge, and that will be the true litmus test that determines whether or not Connor Prelip is in fact back. And lastly, we have Emmett Sheehan, who helped the Dodgers to win in San Diego, tossing five innings, allowing two hits and one run, walking two while striking out five. He induced 15 whiffs with 36% CSW across 84 pitches. And Sheehan earned the King Cole by leading baseball with that 36% CSW on Sunday. His velo is still 94.5, 94 to 95 miles per hour on the four-seamer, but he found an extra inch of IVB to give his four-seamer that elite shape that it's had all year. He had decent command of sliders as well, but I think the most notable change for Sheehan has been to his curveball, which he's thrown 4 miles per hour harder for three straight starts while only sacrificing an inch of drop. That's pretty dope. The pitch led his arsenal with six whiffs and a whopping 57% CSW yesterday, and the curveball may be the key to unlocking Sheehan's potential without last year's velocity. But if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Sunday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily SP roundup over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the mound and check out the relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of save situations or blew their saves. Starting with the former, Caleb Killian worked around a run for his sixth save. PJ Poulin had a hitless six-out save, his third save of the year. Cade Smith worked around an unearned run to record his MLB leading 26th save. Yoan Duran had a hitless ninth for his 21st save. Yoendries Gomez had his eighth save with a perfect ninth. Alex Lang pitched a perfect ninth for his seventh save. Jordan Wicks pitched a hitless 10th for his first save. We saw Jacob Webb pitch in that one. He earned his second win after striking out three in a scoreless ninth while the game was tied. Riley O'Brien recorded his 20th save with a perfect ninth. Sammy Natera Jr. recorded his first save of his career with a scoreless four out outing. No clue where Sam Bachman was in this one, but it seemed like the Angels wanted to lean on the southpaw Natera as he faced three left-handed batters in this one. And lastly, Edgardo Henriquez recorded a save with a hitless ninth for the Dodgers. Tanner Scott recorded four outs across the seventh and eighth to record his sixth hold. Hopefully we don't see Scott in more of a high leverage reliever role that would diminish his fantasy value. And in terms of closers to pitch outside of save situations or blow their saves, Louis Varland struck out three while pitching the ninth in a tie game, but he did allow a run and took his third loss as a result. Kenley Jansen pitched a scoreless ninth in a tie game, but he allowed four runs in the 10th to take his fourth loss. Josh Hader benefited in that one with his second win after pitching a hitless ninth while the game was still tied. Sir Anthony Dominguez pitched a scoreless sixth in a one-run deficit. He hadn't pitched since last Monday, so this was clearly a maintenance outing for Dominguez, but I'm not sure why it came so early in the game. Trevor Megill struck out three in a scoreless ninth in a tie game that the Brewers would lose in 10 innings. Elvis Alvarado pitched a perfect sixth, trailing by three, and I'm not sure who the A's closer is right now. My money was on Alvarado, but he's struggled recently, and now they got him pitching in the sixth inning in a deficit. Aroldis Chapman allowed two runs in the ninth to blow his second save, but the Red Sox would hold on to win in 10 innings. And lastly, David Bednar pitched a scoreless eighth and ninth in a tie game. He hadn't pitched since Wednesday, so the Yankees were leaning heavily on him in that one. But if you'd like more information on relief pitchers, check out Rick Graham's daily articles over on pitcherlist.com. And before we look forward to today's games, we're going to take a quick break. Now we'll look forward to Monday, June 29th, a day in which we'll have just 13 games on our slate. My matchup of the day is Eric Lauer versus Gage Jump. Not a couple of aces, but Jump has pitched really well recently. He gets a true challenge here against the Dodgers in Sacramento. I think this is going to be the real test of whether or not we can trust Jump as just a probably start the rest of the year, because I've been worried about how he looks at home. I've been worried about how he looks against stronger offenses. I don't feel great about his secondaries, but his fastball is dope. Let's see how he performs in Sacramento, where Eric Lauer, I want to see what he does against against a more difficult offense. He's had some easy matchups thus far. He's looked like a guy we can trust for a win pitching for the Dodgers. We're not looking for strikeouts, just decent ratios with the possibility of a win or quality start. And I want to see if this is a guy that we can stream in matchups that might be a little more difficult, or if we just only use Lauer when he's facing really weak lineups. In terms of probable starters, we've got three guys in the auto starts tier, including Braxton Ashcraft in Philadelphia, Parker Messick versus the Rangers, and Shota Imanaga versus the Padres. Our probably starts tier has five guys, and our questionable starts tier has 10. And that's where we'll find our streamer of the day in Robert Gasser versus the Reds. Gasser isn't great, but he does have the ability to go five innings, with decent ratios. He could qualify for a win, and you're facing the Reds on the road. It should be a pretty easy matchup for Robert Gasser there. I'd also keep an eye out for Zebby Matthews in Houston. It's a little bit more of a coin flip than I like, with a floor that's a little bit scarier than I'd like, but Zebby Matthews has proven to be able to provide decent starts, and he's somebody who is allowed to go deep into games. So if you're in a quality start league, Zebby Matthews is definitely even higher. If you're looking for pitchers with an opener, it's not the greatest pickings, slim pickings, as they might say. We'll see Winston Santos in Cleveland with an opener. Santos is making his MLB debut here, which has me a little bit wary, definitely in the do not start tier. But the Cleveland Guardians lineup is not great right now without Jose Ramirez, but they did just get back Chase DeLauder. If you're looking for another opener, we got Griffin Canning with an opener in Chicago against the Cubs. That one I stay far away from. Canning has not been great this year since his season debut. In terms of hitter suggestions, I target Red Sox hitters versus Miles Mikolas in Fenway Park. Mikolas has been one of the worst pitchers in baseball this year, and he has a 5.24 ERA. Fenway Park is also a great hitter's park. I'd also look at Guardians hitters versus the aforementioned Winston Santos and an opener in Progressive Field. Santos is making his MLB debut. He also had a 7.44 ERA at AA before his promotion. He's 24 years old. I don't see Santos having some success here. So let's see what the Guardians can do against him. I'd also target Cubs hitters versus the aforementioned Griffin Canning and his opener in Wrigley Field. Canning has a 7.38 ERA on the season. I'd also look at Marlins and Rockies hitters in Coors Field. We'll see Sandy Alcantara versus Sean Sullivan in that one, and it's in Coors, so you always want to target hitters there. I'd also target hitters in Sutter Health Park. We'll see the Dodgers take on the A's. The pitching matchup is Eric Lauer versus Gage Jump, so target some right-handed hitters on the Dodgers and A's. Now we can close things out with our relievers to watch. Aroldis Chapman has pitched on back-to-back days and in three of the past four, so expect Garrett Whitlock to step up for the Red Sox. Cade Smith has pitched on back-to-back days, so expect Hunter Gaddis to be the temporary closer for the Guardians. Josh Hader has pitched on back-to-back days, but so has Brian King, so maybe Brian Abreu is the top option for a save for the Astros. And lastly, Jacob Webb has pitched on back-to-back days and in four of the past five, so expect Caleb Thielbar to be the top option for save out of the Cubs bullpen on Monday. But that'll do it for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check out all of the great articles and features we have on the site. Sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to the Discord and to support the Pitcher List staff. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler, where I do daily SP streamers and I break down every single start via the Pitcher List stats player cards. Tune into YouTube tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast, and make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.
This has been the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, rate us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at PitcherList, and help support what we do by joining our Discord with PitcherList Plus at PitcherList.com/plus.